Hey y'all, what is up? You are listening to a new episode of What's Up with Danny. I feel like I didn't sound very enthusiastic right there, but it's just kind of the voice I have. If you've listened to this podcast enough, you know I tend to not get very excitable about things. My voice stays at a pretty level. Yeah, it's just the way it is. But yeah, this is a pretty exciting day for me. I'm gonna get to the information about the episode in a second, but I mean, it's pretty exciting, right? We're posting our 100th episode today. That means we have had 100 conversations with, I wish I knew how many people it was off the top of my head. At least 100, if you think bands and groups of people that we've had on. I know we've had some repeat guests, but yeah, 100 episodes. I never would have thought we would have made it this far, but here we are. And yeah, it's something pretty neat, I guess. I think the one thing that I've learned in doing 100 episodes, though, is that, as much as I don't think I am capable of having, important and meaningful conversations with people. And I think that was the thing. Like, they say that, if you want to get good at something, or if you're, if you have something that you're afraid to do, you need to just immerse yourself in it. And it's not like I was afraid of talking to people, but I never really felt like a very social person. And so, the idea that I've put out 100 episodes of 100 conversations and even felt comfortable enough to put them out in the world is just, I don't know, there's something about that that's pretty wild to me. But yeah, anyways, enough babbling for me. Let's get to the episode here. Our guest on our 100th episode is none other than Michi Farias. I am so bad with last names, so I apologize to everybody, all the 100 people that have been on this podcast, if I have mispronounced your last name or your first name for that matter. I really am just the worst at pronunciations, but that's not what this is about. We had a great conversation. Michi, if you're listening to this, thank you again for giving us your time. I love to chat art, especially with artists who are talented and find art meaningful. That seemed like a poorly slapped together sentence, but here we go. Yeah, we sat down and talked to her for a little while. We talked about art, like I said, what it's like to be a local artist in the Grand Rapids area. We talk about music, what it's been like for her to play with bands as well as write her own songs, which I have heard. A song She showed us a song right after we recorded this episode, and it was very good. So if be on the lookout for that music. We talked about some of the art she's created and how she defines her work as well as the value of her work. And we talk about some local artists that she admires, and we cover a lot more too. So pretty interesting episode. It was great to chat with her. Yeah, I'm just babbling here now. So let me get to the promo stuff and then we will get you right on to this 100th episode here. You can follow us on Instagram at What's Up with Danny Podcast to get episode updates. We announce releases, we post little pictures here and there, and get the fun behind the scenes of the podcast. We have a YouTube channel, What's Up with Danny Pod on YouTube. We have been filming the last few episodes, so look out for those videos in the upcoming weeks here. We are also on Facebook, facebook.com/whatsupwithdanny. Make sure you rate, review, subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. We appreciate any sharing or any ratings. Give us a 5-star, it really helps us out. Tell us or tell a friend about us. Yeah, we really appreciate it. I feel like I'm really stumbling through this intro right now, which is good because I'm about to go on the radio a little later, and I feel like if I get this little awkwardness out right now, it's gonna be a lot better when I get on the radio. So hopefully that's the case. I'll be a little more confident at that point. But yeah, come see Tim. We will be at the Pyramid Scheme on May 28th. I believe the show is with Crooked Spires. For their album release, we'll be playing with a couple other bands too. Hexing is going to be playing a gig sometime in the summer. I don't believe it's been announced yet, so I won't say when it is, but be on the lookout for that announcement soon. And in the meantime, enjoy our 100th episode. with Michi. Have a great week, everybody.
Cool. So now I feel like we have to come up, before we even start, we should come up with something to tell people how to get here a little bit easier. Because I
Do I
feel
need to
like
make a video?
we might have to. Just a side note, we'll talk about that. Yeah. Like a little
Well,
video.
if we can find a way to like get people to like find the right location to come
Right.
to, we're getting signs put up, okay?
Yeah.
So that'll help, like once you get in the building.
Right.
But I think the main thing is getting to the building.
Don't you do like a literal, I don't know, just the point on the map? Like you can send your location.
Oh, yeah. There's an idea. That is a much better
She's
idea.
Like you can
smart.
send your
She's
literal
smart.
location and then it's in the back of the building because it sent me way to the front.
Yeah, I mean, technically that's like where the address is, but for some reason, like, there's like one technical way. Like, you have to go like downstairs, like almost to the basement, and then go through like this area. And that's the only way to get from like that part of the building to this part of the building. So I don't know why the address is still the same, because it's kind of they're split up.
Yeah. Well,
But
as we were walking, I was like, there has to be a way. Like, I don't know the front of the building well at all. So I'm like, is there a way to get into where we are from one of
No,
these
if
doors?
someone tried to like go in the front door where the address is, I think it's always locked.
Weird.
But I don't know. I've never tried.
But I'm gonna do the pin thing. I like that idea.
Yeah.
That's
Yeah,
I don't
just
know why
send
that has always
your
been a thing.
coordinate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do that all the time.
Do you think that people are now with like the advancements in GPS are more aware of like their latitude and longitude than ever?
Hell no.
Or if they
Hell
even take
no.
a moment
They're
to
There's too
like,
many numbers.
right?
They're more reliant on the phone or whatever doing it for them.
Like, do you think there's ever anybody that's like, I'm at 42 degrees west longitude? There's some scientists out there that's
Maybe
like, you
like a
sound
dude,
like
how
a
do you know
fucking
where my
marine.
house is?
Right. Yeah, I never think about how impractical we are as far as like our GPS usage,
Yeah.
like how people probably don't know how to get home from somewhere,
Yeah.
like whereas they used to probably just be able to find a way, or
Imagine
like,
a road trip in the 90s,
oh yeah,
right? With a map.
yeah. You ever watch an old
MapQuest.
movie from the 90s and they're on a road trip and they literally are just driving with a map in front of
Yeah,
them?
in
Yeah,
front.
and they're like looking at the map with the steer. I don't know why it's way up here, but
Because you
still.
have the map in your hand. And
True.
then they get lost and like, oh, I had it upside down.
Yeah.
Don't maps have like north, what, you know, like, I don't know.
Education maybe wasn't what it was, but,
Probably.
you know,
Right.
my parents would do that. How I don't understand, like, how to drive from here to Florida with a map.
Right.
My parents used to do that every year.
Right.
And for the longest time, my dad would not trust a GPS. Like, I'd be like, dude, just get one of those TomTom things. Like, they're not that expensive, and you don't have to deal with a map. He's like, oh, I'll be fine.
Yeah, do you think, how easy do you think it would be to just get by on signs, right? Like, just get on a highway and be like, all right, this one's gonna take me to Detroit. All right, cool, let's see where and then you get
I
to
can totally
Detroit.
drive to Detroit.
Right.
I've done that drive enough.
Yeah, I feel like getting to a specific, like if you were going to a specific house, that would be your problem. But if you're like, all right, I'm gonna go to Minneapolis, like you just have to have your mindset on like what cities you need to like kind of get to on your way.
Right.
And then you could use signs that way.
Minneapolis is weird. You know, there'd be people that'd be like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to drive west. And then they'd hit the lake eventually, you know? And they'd be like, I guess I need to ride the ferry across this lake. Like, there would be, I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe they would be like, okay, maybe I got to go down and come back up a bit. I don't know. I don't know how people think. But there is that interesting part where it was at one point a map, and now, and then it was like you printed directions, written out directions off of MapQuest. With no map, just sentences that were in a numbered order or whatever.
Yep.
And that's still a thing, but just in the map form on GPS.
Yeah.
It doesn't, does it feel like we got smarter in that span of time, I guess? I don't know.
I
Like,
think it's
how is
just like
technology
how
helpful?
technology kind of grew. You know, it's more accessible.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we didn't have smartphones back then.
Right. But how smart are they, really?
Smarter than I am.
I guess.
So a little computer in your hand. They
Right.
didn't have that. A car phone used to be extremely expensive in like the
Oh, yeah.
80s, and now we all have one.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's another thing, too. I feel like we should all go home and watch old 90s movies and just have a good laugh about all the technology that was in things, like a car phone that had, like, a cable attached to it in the middle, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there's a 10-year-old listening to this that's a car phone. What?
What?
You mean Bluetooth? Like, that's, I don't know.
You think 10-year-olds listen to the podcast?
No way.
Not a chance.
Maybe. What's a floppy disk?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Internet used to come on CDs.
Yeah.
Right?
Or paid
CD-ROMs.
Yeah. Oh,
that was one that I got asked by a little kid. They were like, well, what is that for? It's like, that's a payphone.
Yeah. Do you ever think there's going to be a time where payphones become like a national monument? Like, I don't know, maybe like a statue or some like historical significance where they put up a sign where it was like, this was a payphone. This is what people put quarters in to make phone calls over time.
I don't think so.
Probably
they should have kept them.
Yeah, I mean, there's not very many out there, I don't think, because it's just...
Yeah, you can run by an abandoned one sometime, and it's like one of the most depressing things I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's just standing there with no phone attached to it. Most people rip them off.
Somewhere there's a phone booth out there that is actually like a time machine. That if you stand in it, similar to probably the movie Hot Tub Time Machine.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's gotta be.
You know what we should do? We should go on an adventure and find it.
That would be fun. Yeah, we'll write a movie.
All right.
Phone booth. We'll call it Phone Booth. There's not another movie called Phone Booth.
Yes, there definitely is.
Yeah. Isn't Colin Farrell in that movie? We're going way off the rails here. Let's start the podcast now.
Okay.
There we go. Well, welcome, Michi. Thank you for doing the podcast. We appreciate your time. Let's just get right to it. We tend to talk to people about their passions and what got them there.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to talk to you a little bit about art and your art and some of the paintings that you've done. But I also want to talk to you about music a little bit, too. So let's start off with music, kind of work our way into
art.
Into art. Tell me a little bit about what got you into music, where you started, what sort of got you that itch.
Well, I started playing violin when I was like 10 or 11 years old, just through my school. And I had the same teacher for 7 years. And she taught me how to play both guitar and violin.
Nice.
And I really wanted to continue that. And my best friend and I were super into, you know, covering songs and playing music. And I don't know, it really just blew up from there. And then I kept meeting more musicians over time. And we started practicing with Further Closer, which is like the most previous project that I was in. That's on hiatus right now. But it was a great project. Jackie's just really busy, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, meeting Jackie was really great for my music career in general. Like, I met so many musicians, and I was able to kind of build a community with that. And I wanted to kind of share my music, you know? It's hard to put yourself out there.
Right.
And that kind of gave me the courage to kind of step into my own solo music, which I'll be recording this year.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Very cool. When you started, you said 10, right? That was when you started playing. Was it something you kind of, like, where did that idea sort of set in? Were you just like, oh, I want to start playing music? Or did you kind of, were you influenced, you know, by some other things or maybe by your friends or something?
I always thought it was super cool. Mm. I mean, everyone has this image of a rock star in their mind as a kid. Yeah. Like, what's the coolest thing you could do?
Yeah.
It's like, play a show at the Pyramid Scheme. I'm not old enough to go there yet. Which was a big deal to me in high school, at least. Mm. But yeah, I really wanted to kind of get over my stage fright. And honestly, I managed to do it, but it took a lot of steps and a lot of practice and singing in front of people. But I think I just gravitated towards it because my brain just works for it. Like, it works really well for art and music and not much else. But I just couldn't stop. Like, as soon as I started practicing the violin, like, I became obsessed with it. I started doing, like, plays and all these little events. And I don't know. It kind of became a big decision between art and music my senior year. I felt like I had to make a choice in terms of career. And I ended up going more so art, but I could still play music. And so I did.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Where, now, as far as, like, the stage fright goes, what were some of the things, I guess, that, like, obviously immersing yourself in the community and being a part of it mm-hmm. helps, too, and giving yourself those opportunities, I guess, or maybe forcing yourself to take in those opportunities is probably it. But what was it like the first time you performed in front of people?
A hot mess. I mean, I was in probably high school the first time I was getting in a big stage because I went to Byron Center High School and they have the Van Single and it's pretty cute, but it is a full like theater that they got over there. And you are nervous if you have to do a play and, you know, there's the full just audience out there, 200-300 people back when that was a thing. Yeah, it was nerve-wracking, but the more I did it, the more I kind of got over it. But I feel like anxiety and just kind of being afraid of people thinking that you suck is a big thing in high school. And the 100%. More you get in front of an audience, the more you realize that, like, they don't really care as deeply as you think they do, which makes it a lot easier. Like, really, what helped me was being in an audience. It's like, oh, like, how do I feel? And how are they doing? And I'm just here to experience some, you know, a good time and listen to some tunes.
Yeah.
So kind of confronting that really helped me.
That's an interesting point. I actually don't think anybody has brought that up.
Yeah.
What the, maybe having a viewpoint from the perspective of when you are an audience member versus when you're on stage. I don't think that's ever been brought up. I don't know how it's
Yeah, I don't know. I remember the first time I got up on stage, I was like so freaked out. And there was just, luckily, there was like so much like fog machines and and bright lights.
The lights are on you. You can't see.
I can't see anyone. It's amazing.
Right.
But I know they're out there. But I can't see them reacting to what I'm doing, so I'm just going to do my thing.
Yeah. Now, when you're on stage, I mean, do you have this... Because I know for me, the first few times I performed, we had, like, the lights or whatever up on us, but I know I could still see, you know, first couple rows of people in a stand room or whatever, but, like just making eye contact with one person was enough to send me in a spiral where I know I was, like... shaking, trying to play, barely holding the pick, you know?
Yeah.
Like, do you kind of get that sense or remember feeling that sensation while you're performing?
Oh, definitely. Lock eyes with a person too long and then they won't stop looking at you.
Right.
So after that, if I make eye contact with anybody, I'm not looking at them again. But my big thing, you have to just think that they're drinking and just chilling. And wanting to listen to your music if they're there. So that made me feel a lot better about it. But yeah, those people who are confronting you with their eyes sometimes can throw you off.
Now, what's some of the like feedback you're getting as you're sort of kind of dipping your toes into the performance perspective? Like, what are you hearing from people that are seeing you perform? And that in that time, maybe not so much.
It depends on which music project. With Further Closer, I was doing more like omnichord, violin, backup vocals, a little bit of banjo on one song. We don't really pull that one out. But we had a great time, but there were so many band members. We had like 10 people in our band. So people would just kind of crowd bomb you. But with my solo music, I think it's a lot more emotive because, you know, it's like I'm singing my heart out and my words that I put together, my poetry is in motion. And it's really emotional. And people, I had someone crying at my show, and that was like really hard for me because then it's like I'm trying to not emote the same level as them. Because the song is sad. So, like, I felt like that was what made me feel like it was real, you know, like my words were being heard and emoted in the way that, you know, I was feeling at the time. But yeah, hard emotions.
Because I would imagine that that has to be something that, while in that moment you're like, oh, I'm cool, I'm being heard. But you, that's sort of what you're going for, I guess, right? Like, I can imagine, like, if it were me and I'm, like, if I'm playing and I'm making somebody cry, I'm taking a really long look and, like, oh, wow, are these lyrics, like, sad? Like, I guess for me, I don't write the lyrics. So to me, I'm like, right. They don't have that emotional attachment to me. So I'm like, what are we doing to make this person want to cry? Like, either we're playing too beautifully, maybe, or, like, there's just something about the song. But right. It wouldn't resonate that same way with me. So I guess hearing that from your perspective, I think that's, you know, if you're able to make somebody
feel something. That's what I want.
Yeah, that seems like it's an incredible experience.
The whole point of our music.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Make someone feel something, you mm-hmm. know, whether they look at a piece or if they hear a song that they really like. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel like when we're young, you know, most of this record is about my relationship and the downfall of that relationship. Mm-hmm. And obviously when I'm singing about the breakup, it's really hard emotionally mm-hmm. because it kind of brings me back to that time. Mm-hmm. So when I'm singing it again, it's like pretty hard if you're touring. Like after there's like three specific songs. I think when I played a house show last time in Grand Rapids, and I had a dude just be like, I have to lay down after that. And he ended up being, Jay Bird from Condor and Jay Bird, and I ended up touring out into Iowa with his band. So that was a very cool opportunity, even though that was on the cusp of the beginning of COVID. So that's when things, I stopped really playing a lot of stuff live.
Right.
But yeah, that's how it went down.
Nice. Well, I'm curious. I want to do maybe like a little bit of comparing between the two, because with the Further Closer, I mean, there's, like you said, there's, you know, an infinite amount of musicians that seem like, and the lineups maybe were constantly changing to, you know, maybe some shows you wouldn't quite have a full team, and then some shows there's everybody's in. Were you, like, how much of that do you think you were able to sort of pull in from other musicians and kind of, like, help it sort of set you to figuring out maybe some of the stuff that you wanted to write in your own work, like in some of your solo stuff?
Oh, yeah. I mean, listening to Alex Perez, oh, my goodness. He's one of my best buddies.
Yeah.
And just an immaculate, interesting, inventive musician.
Definitely.
He really comes up with stuff that inspired me. We have a lot of the same kind of freak folk influences with our music, like a lot of Devendra Banhart or Joanna Newsom. Or, I don't know, just your classic freak folk. Vashti Bunyan, that's another one. Hell of a name. But yeah, he influenced me a ton with playing music and kind of just relaxing about performing. It's not a big deal. Like,
right.
You get through it, and in 10 to 30 minutes, usually, it's done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, rip the Band-Aid off.
Right, and I think shout out to Alex, by the way. We need to get him on because I don't know why we haven't yet, but we need to get him on the podcast. But he definitely, aside from being an incredible musician, he definitely seems to have one of the more relaxed, like, personas on stage that I might have ever seen.
Yeah.
We played probably, I don't know, a few months ago, we played a show with Alex, played it, and just, like, casually sitting there playing guitar, ripping through their songs, just killing it. But this, just like this very chill environment sort of came out from him playing. And I don't see that very often with a lot of like solo artists,
right.
You know? Well, like, oh, actually, that's a lie. I see that plenty of times with solo artists. But he does it in a way that just, it's
calming.
Like that,
it's
yeah,
his own way.
There.
It's dreamy.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
There's this, yeah, dreaminess to it. That's a great word for it. yeah, because, I mean, tell me again all of the instruments that you played in Further Closer.
The kitchen sink, basically, was my role in it. But yeah, I usually play guitar for my solo music, mm-hmm. right? But for Further Closer, I played everything else. So, like, I have an omnichord, for example. An omnichord is this really weird niche, like, synth from the 80s that was created for elderly people with arthritis who used to play piano. And it is a wonky but fun instrument, and it's really easy to use it as a songwriting tool or, like, just to fill out the space a little bit more. But super great instrument, and I really recommend people check it out. They're a little rare, but they're kind of fun. So I play that a lot of the time. I also play violin, of course. Been playing violin forever and definitely going to add some of that onto my record. I'm not going to Andrew Bird it and do both. I feel like that's too much to be focusing on with the looping pedal. So, yeah, I was doing violin for that as well, like a banjo, and then just random, like, little instruments on top of that. But usually just omnichord and violin were the big ones.
How about the cowbell?
I think we did have a cowbell for the drummer.
Oh, okay. Oh, well, you didn't play it.
No. That was what about the triangle? That was part of, like, the rock and roll song. Like, they hit it, like, a lot.
Yeah.
So I had an omnichord part in that song that had the cowbell in it.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, Jackie's about is really about the cowbell.
Love it. Yeah. Tell me a little bit, I guess, about what, like, when playing with Further Closer, is it kind of, I imagine the writing is very group oriented, everybody kind of puts in their say. I would imagine maybe
over time,
yeah,
for sure.
Maybe initially it might have been Jackie kind of telling, you know, hey, okay, these are the songs, you know, maybe something here, maybe something there. But how easy was it for you to maybe kind of find your fitting within the group?
Yeah, because there's so many people. Yeah,
right, because you don't want to clutter it up with, you know, too much sound, but you kind of want to find those sweet spots. I mean,
exactly.
How would you find yourself kind of navigating your way into a song?
Well, my big thing is I would harmonize with Jackie a lot, like basically a backup singer style. Jackie is an incredible just audio tech and will record just the basics all by herself of what her basic idea is for a song. Already usually has a vague idea of words, but it really does evolve over time as people add their instrumentals or their take on what she wanted. We also really try to not overclutter things, which is hard to do. You don't want to always all be going off at once. You have to pull back, which means not playing all the time.
Right.
And people are like, you're not doing this all the time. I don't care. I'm here to make it sound good. I'm supposed to hold off for a second. You know, sometimes that makes it just so much sweeter. But yeah, it's definitely a balance and it takes a lot of practice. We practice for a few hours, like a couple times a week, all the time, especially if there's a show ahead of time. 'Cause it's hard to organize that many people.
Right.
Yeah.
I was hoping that we would get into that. I mean, with the scheduling and everything, I mean, is everybody at practice every time? Or, I mean, you said you're on the hiatus,
Yeah. It depends on who. Okay,
I'm not going to say
any names. I'm always at practice. There's just like about two people who don't really show up all the time, but doesn't matter. They practice on their own, so sounds fine. The big issue is if like your drum, like one of your main instrumentals, like isn't there. Like if Jackie's not there, or if Cam is not there, or drummer, it's not gonna happen.
Yeah. Right.
It's not gonna happen. Meanwhile, if you have anyone else in the middle, you're fine. So it really, you know, dependent on a few core members, and then the rest are, you know, come and go. It's more like a collective almost.
Sure.
But Jackie has so many projects. So many projects that she's on. Like right now she's been really focused on Greet Death.
Sure.
And Greet Death is killing it.
Yeah, yeah.
So we've been doing, shouts out Greet Death.
Yeah.
The homies.
Catch them on tour later this month.
Yeah. Check out Greet Death. They are incredible. But yeah, she's been recording them and in the band and touring with them, and also doing kind of a Fever Haze revival at the moment.
Shout out to Fever Haze. They crushed it this past weekend. Did you enjoy
it? It was awesome. I was dancing. I nearly shed a tear at Daddy-O and Nose Rings. Just utter classics from my youth.
Right.
We love the Fever Haze. But they crushed it at the Pyramids game. Hopefully we'll be able to get together for some more Further Closer stuff soon, too. But I want to record my album first, so.
Yeah. Now let's move on to that. So you've been playing the solo stuff. You said you went on a little tour out to Iowa pre-COVID. Take away COVID entirely in that little tour you did, what is the goal at that time after having that experience? And maybe, well, actually, hold on, sorry. Sometimes I ask a question and I'm like, no, that's stupid. Let me start here. Tell me a little bit about that feeling to go and play some shows out and kind of get that experience, sort of get your, you know, your feet on the ground with that. And then what that sort of led you to thinking, oh, well, this is what I want to do now. Or maybe some of the goals it might have inspired you to have.
Yeah. Well, I met a few bands, right, at, you know, my first, like, little house show, and they really enjoyed my songs, apparently, and asked me to go play out there. And, you know, we kind of maintained a relationship and still talked to each other. I was really inspired by, I don't know, the fact that I was kind of putting myself out there and being really vulnerable and people were responding to it. Sure. And I made a lot of friends just randomly. I didn't think I would get along with so many people in Iowa, but I did. I made a bunch of friends and I had the best time. And I feel like that's what everyone wants. You want to have a good time. You want to put yourself out there and play your music. But I don't have a record out yet, so that's kind of problematic. So my idea was, you know, once I have it recorded, I can plan another tour and actually, you know, go to more places for a longer period of time. But yeah, it was so inspiring to just be able to play in front of a lot of people like that at the Village Theater. Yeah.
Now, it's funny hearing you say that because I've only been to Iowa one time and I drove through it essentially. And I was like, oh, I don't need to stop anywhere in this state
because
I
just,
I couldn't find it enjoyable, just at least from a driving perspective. But I can imagine the show there, just having gone to enough shows around the Midwest in some podunk town, Terre Haute type esque town or whatever, like, that sense of community, I think, in those neighborhoods or even like somewhere in a state like Iowa might resonate so much more because it might mean more to them, you know? Whereas like in Grand Rapids, there's definitely, it's obvious there's a scene here.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I think people might tend to maybe take it for granted at times or there's enough division within the music scene where you can find your own pocket, but it's maybe not always a collective community in terms of, you know, different genres branch out, different groups or whatever. Whereas, like, maybe I'm generalizing here, but I can imagine a place like Iowa, there's, it maybe means a lot more to them because I don't know how many bands are coming through Iowa.
You'd be surprised.
You know?
You'd be surprised. A city's a city.
Sure,
like,
sure.
No matter where it is.
Because if I think of Iowa, I think, like, okay, Des Moines is there.
That's where Slipknot's from, dude.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cool. I didn't know that.
Random fact of the day.
Nice. I feel like that's probably common knowledge amongst people who listen to this, and now I'm embarrassed. They heard me not know where Slipknot.
We're from Michigan. We're blessed with a lot of badass musicians.
Right, right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Everyone from Detroit, right? You got Jack White's from here.
Sure,
and then,
sure.
You know, I hate to say it, but Eminem's from here. Like, there's so many, like, huge names.
Yeah.
Madonna. Mm-hmm. Who's from Michigan. It's so cool. So we're like super blessed with just amazing music scene here. But it's like the vibe of the place. Like going to a place like the Park Theater in Holland, which is like your musical, local kind of not even talent show, but like basically like the local talent show. There's a really strong community in places like that, and it's really comparable to the energy that you see there. So people, you know, some really experienced people playing in front of others and some who aren't. But yeah, I had a really good time. It's in the Quad Cities that I was playing out there.
Oh, okay, sure.
So pretty fun.
Nice. Now, ideally, I mean, where would you like to see yourself go? I mean, are you thinking full U.S., like try to make it as many places as you can? Or
world tour.
I mean, I have a very flexible schedule I make for myself. So
sure.
I really could, you know, go for a long time. And I don't mind driving.
Right.
I don't mind driving at all. I actually have a great time driving. So I feel like it's totally doable to do, like, U.S., but tour is still hard, you know?
Yeah.
It's better if you have others with you. So right now I'm trying to figure out, like, band members. you know, that could potentially play with me. Because when I was, you know, recording one of my songs with Jackie, which I can show you if you want, she added a slide guitar, which sounds bomb. It's so good. And drums and bass, because she plays everything. And the song is so fleshed out that I feel like if, you know, she adds her own kind of flair to it, I can even just add someone on to play it. Like, it wouldn't have to be a question of what is already written for the song. But yeah, I'm working on it. I'm so excited.
Now, I want to talk to you a little bit about the songs that you're writing and some of, you mentioned, you know, being a little bit vulnerable and sort of putting yourself out there in the performance perspective. But now, as far as songwriting goes, what is your, like when you start writing a song, where's your head at and where do you see your, like from start to finish, where does the plan go in terms of how it starts in your head to when you put it in through the instrument? Walk me through like a typical songwriting experience for you.
So always I'm diddling on guitar. I play a lot of finger picky kind of stuff. So there's a lot of multiple layers to the guitar. It's kind of freak folk or bluesy. So usually I'd be messing with guitar first. I keep a dedicated dream diary and journal. And I write a lot of poetry, and I kind of compile different pieces of those together to kind of describe different things I'm going through or how I'm feeling during a season or whatever.
Sure.
So it's kind of a lot about that. I have some, you know, love songs, some breakup songs, and I am very honest in them, and I feel like people, you know, really resonate with it.
That's good, though.
Yeah, it's almost like Julia Jacklin, if you've ever heard her, really great kind of musician, wrote an awesome breakup record. And I was like, dang, like the level of emotion in this is kind of similar. It's just, you know, breakups are hard and we all go through it. And sometimes I gravitate towards that. But recently, I've been trying to write, you know, different kinds of songs. And usually they're very dreamy, almost like Alex, you know. It's hard to kind of pinpoint them all to any specific theme as much as, like, I don't know. I have a breakup record and some other songs about my life in it.
So it's sort of like, it's almost an open book in a sense.
Yeah,
the songs
it tells a story, you know, basically, of, like, I feel like 5 years of my life. So, like, it's not easy. It's not like art where I'm making a pretty picture, right? And I'm putting it on a wall, or if I'm painting a person and putting it on a wall, you know, someone can say, I like that or I don't like that. When you're performing a song, you're doing it for minutes at a time at a person and kind of talking about your feelings. And I feel vulnerable because it's like a lot of the stuff I write is just from diary entries. Like, it's really, you know, that's it for me. You're screaming your diary out to a bunch of strangers in a room. And, you know, it's not easy, but, like, it feels good. It's kind of cathartic.
Right. Do you think, so when you mentioned, you know, this experience that you're seeing this person out there crying a little bit while you're playing and experiencing something, are there times where, like, there are the, I'll ask it this way. It's forming in my head. I'll get there. How important is it to you for not only the audience to have the experience, but for you yourself to be able to have the experience and kind of have it be for you? So I guess more so what I'm asking is how much of that performance or those songs are for you, and how much are you thinking about how other people are going to see them or hear them? And
I write it for me, always. Okay, I don't write a song for anybody else. I only ever played music to myself until Jackie heard me and was like, you should record this. What are you doing? I'm in audio tech. We're in a band already. So she helped me a lot with my confidence towards that. And, you know, it means the world to me. So that's like the reason I share it at all, you know. And when I did, I was like, wow, people are actually liking this. I can't believe it.
Now, did that...
You'd be surprised.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's just something new, and usually, you know, I'm art-oriented, so it's like kind of a different world to step into.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, was that something that you felt quickly, like, in terms of, you know, you're writing the songs, you're recording them, you're putting them into the universe, so are you feeling, like, this confidence right away? Like, the first time you recorded a song and showed it to somebody, I mean, what are your emotions? What are your feelings? Like, are you, like, a wreck, or is it like, oh, I'm going to show you this. Please don't tell me what you think of it at all, you know?
I can handle critique. It's a little harsher with music.
Sure.
You know, like, with art, it's like, I went to art school, you know, and you're almost like, they critique you and you get used to it. So you kind of grow a turtle shell to it. So I'd rather people be honest with me if they like it or not. Mm-hmm. I know it's not going to be everyone's cup of tea because music is incredibly subjective.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like gatekeepers when it comes to anything. Like, just have an open mind, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, everyone who is creating music is putting themselves out there. And that takes a lot of courage and a lot of guts. Mm-hmm. Now I'm losing my train of thought. Thinking about the courage. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just a very different world from art. And I think that taking critique for your music can help it, like, at least sonically. Like, I'm not going to change my lyrics, but you can make it sound better, like, in terms of sound. It's like, I want this mixed louder or quieter. Like, that's not going to hurt my feelings. Mm-hmm. But if someone goes, I hate your lyrics, like, damn. Right. But no one's done that, though. Right. So,
why? Yeah, I would hope so.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just like, you always have that fear. Like, oh, no. Like,
yeah.
What if someone comes at you with, like, a suggestion, like, hey, what about if you say it this way, even though they're helping you say the same message? But
I mean,
trying
if it sounded better, sure.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I would take it seriously, because, like, songs the way it is. I've been playing, like, literally these songs for a few years now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about time I just record them and put them out there. I have art for it, too, because I do a lot of, like, self-portraits that would just fit the theme of it. So it's all going to come together.
Yeah. Would you say that you trust yourself as a musician, I guess? Like, when you go to record something and you go to put it out, like, you're obviously, you know, you're writing things and you are comfortable with them, but do you trust yourself to know, like, maybe say, like, when someone does give you some sort of critique, do you trust yourself to know, oh, well, I'm
whether it's
I'm
valuable or
yeah,
not?
Yeah, and then maybe also with your own critiques, do you feel like you can trust where your gut is telling you to maybe go with a song or even with art, like an art piece?
Usually I like it if I want advice the most, you know, because with my musician friends like Alex and Jackie, I'll usually play my songs to them, and Jackie has been, you know, giving me some great pointers and stuff for, you know, twisting a song a little bit to make it juicier. Sure. And the same with Alex. Like, they give great critique. And usually with people who you know are musicians, you trust their opinion a lot more. Mm. It's the same with art. Like, you want to ask an artist, like, whether it looks good or not and what their opinion is, because they just know more. And they know what you're going for by your past work. So I think that having that critique is really healthy, and you have to grow that shell in order to kind of improve your music, but it's not always a necessity, you know? Like, I feel pretty good about my songwriting skills, and I think my record is ready to go after playing these songs a gajillion times, because I feel like I play through my whole thing, like, every day, just in practice, because it's really tricky finger-picking, usually. But that's what makes it fun.
Yeah,
the challenge.
Yeah, that's what I like about it. Like, art and music are both extremely challenging in different ways, but it's kind of in the same floaty kind of world. They're related to each other in some intangible way. You know, the only way you kind of get both is, like, with music videos or video games and movies, where it's all one thing in motion. But as separate things, I feel like art and music are extremely different from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm completely exploring different themes in both. My music's a lot more vulnerable because it's literally my diary entries. But for my art, I'm almost like celebrating others more. So that becomes a very different thing.
Mm. Explain that a little bit when you say you're celebrating others. Like, what do you necessarily mean by
that?
Well,
with my artwork, like, you know, I do a lot of figurative paintings, a lot of nude paintings of just people who are really close to me. Mm-hmm. A lot of my really good friends, they'll come and model for me, and that takes all the guts in the world. Mm-hmm. That's like being on a stage, except worse. Right. You know?
Yeah.
So I see a lot of bravery in kind of the act of modeling for an artist like that. And usually, you know, I'm a realist. Like, I paint realistically.
Yeah.
Kind of like I feel like a human printer sometimes. So what I'm trying to do is at least get very interesting references when I have them in for photos and celebrate them and kind of our youth and our womanhood in a very witchy and fun sense. Yeah. And it has really healed me, too, because I feel like, you know, when you have people be vulnerable towards you and you yourself are vulnerable, when, you know, you're posing naked for someone, you feel more comfortable with your body. Like, you just don't have this, like, feeling of insecurity anymore. Like, there's nothing to hide. Mm-hmm. And you see kind of just what a normal body looks like, because we all have this Instagram photoshopped airbrushed image of what a person should look like. So I really just like celebrating my friends and how wonderful they are when I paint them.
What are some of the things that you do to maybe make someone comfortable in that scenario to so they can express that vulnerability? I have like 7 questions that I'm gonna hope that I can remember about this.
Do you need a pen and paper?
I might. Maybe we'll see. Keep write it down that I might need a pen and a paper. So how do you go about pulling that vulnerability from somebody? And then is there some, like, as the person, the artist that's, you know, capturing the essence of this, do you see that general shift in that person
when people when become, they comfy,
become their
you
comfortable
see them become
self?
Confident.
Yeah.
I want to be someone feels safe with, first of all. Like, they can trust me. They are someone I know. I'm not going to paint a stranger. I feel like that's a safety issue, first of all.
Sure.
But I only paint people who are already going to be fairly comfortable with me. And usually, you know, with women, we're a lot more comfortable with each other. And it's a lot easier to have a woman model for me without getting shy. Men, on the other hand, they get shy.
Sure.
So usually what I have people do, you know, is they always have the choice, you know, to dress down or up however much they want. I'm cool with having someone, like, model in lingerie or something. But usually, you know, we just warm up to it. I take practice shots and I take some headshots because you're already there in front of my camera. Like, I might as well take some practice shots and get you comfy.
Right.
But I don't know. I feel like it's just pampering them a little bit. And I recently am having some people model for some more paintings, and like, they're more confident. Like, I had a girl come back twice now. It was her second time modeling for me, Ayana. And I made a giant painting of her. It was like a life-sized nude painting. And I just sold it. It's like 4x4 feet. It's huge.
Wow.
And she was so comfortable this time. I feel like the longer you have with someone or however close, like, it just makes it easier for them. And a lot of the people you meet in art school have done figure drawing classes and stuff where it kind of removes that weirdness that you might get, or like weird expectations or anything, because usually it's like very upfront. It's like, hey, I want to draw people. And doing figurative paintings makes you a better artist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a tradition going back thousands of years. Like, it makes you a better artist.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, a lot of people who are just really comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's kind of maybe back up a little bit. And we'll work our way in back into the present. But where we mentioned it a little bit briefly with music, and you kind of glossed over it a little bit in there. But tell me, do you remember the first painting like that feeling that you got, like, or even the first time where you were like, oh, I want to paint something?
Oh, boy. So my very first art classes were in my senior year of high school. Mm. I always drew. Both my mom and dad are artists. They met in art school. Mm. So I, like, grew up seeing a lot of art in my life. But my first, like, really good drawing was from my senior year. And it was when I was, like, winning awards with it in high school that nice. I really realized that it was, like, worth something and I wanted to do it. But even in order to take the classes, like, I kind of jumped into it. It wasn't easy at all making that jump because I was like, I want to go to medical school. And then that summer, I was like, I don't want to go to medical school. I want to be an artist. So I was talking to the teachers to let me into the classes, and please let me in the classes. I'll show you my drawings and my portfolio. And they really liked it and put me in all the AP classes, nice. Which was really lucky, honestly. But yeah, my first big drawing, I still have it hanging in the basement of Palate Coffee and Art, which is my parents' coffee shop. It's called Captive. It's called Captive, and I won the Scholastic Arts and Writing Awards with it. So regionally, it was like a couple gold keys, couple silver keys, and then I got gold portfolio, which like four kids in the state get, and then like two national awards, and I got a trip to New York for that.
Nice.
So when I was in New York and seeing all these other, like, art children, I was really inspired. I was like, you know what? Like, we're going to make this what I do. And I am really happy that I did. Mm. And I kept pushing at it because art is still really hard.
Oh, absolutely.
Art is so hard to do. Yeah. It takes such a long time. It's an investment of, like, your manual labor.
Yeah.
Right.
And your soul.
Yeah.
Now, tell me a little bit. I mean, well, do you think it's gotten easier since you've kind of been more advanced yes. in it? Or do you still kind of get those, like, where, like how often, similar to maybe how you might have a writer's block on a song, do you get, like, a painter's block?
Is it
referred to as painter's block?
I almost jump off the other edge. Like, if I'm stuck on a painting, I'll go diddle around on guitar. Hmm.
I feel like that's a nice way to do it.
Yeah, and you're still productive.
Exactly.
You know? You're still creating, sure. right? The act of creating is, like, wonderful. Sometimes you need to consume some art in order to be inspired and be a consumer.
Mm-hmm.
I usually think, like, I'm being creative or I'm consuming, like, very black and white with artwork. And it has gotten easier, but in some ways, like, it is still so hard because the amount of discipline that it takes to, like, sit down and draw for hours is, like, sometimes I just literally paint myself into a corner. Like, you're putting the paint in painting. Like, you're just sitting there for 6 hours, and by the sixth hour, you're like, I don't want to look at this anymore.
Gotta give your eyes a break.
You gotta push through. You gotta push through it and just keep working at it. Otherwise, you're never gonna finish that painting or that song. And usually, it's just better to get it all done at once. If I linger too much in the last, like, 10% of a painting, it won't get done for a few years, which I'm very guilty of. But that's why it's good to juggle many projects.
Yeah.
Now let's compare the two. We'll say one writing a song, the other creating a piece of art. Like how you mentioned that with the tail end of it, where you're making your final adjustments, similar to how you might record a song and you get the first couple mixes and you say you have some notes for it, and then there's a couple rounds of that, and then you finally have this finished product. From start to finish, how long do you think it takes you? Like, do you think that paintings are ever really done in the same way that, like, a song might never actually be done?
It never feels done, does it?
No.
I mean, if you do realism, like, you can work on a painting forever. Mm. Like, a stipple drawing or an oil painting, like, you could add detail until your eyes roll back. Like, it takes a long time and a lot of patience. And it's the same with the song. Like, how intense are you going in with it and how much time are you going to invest in it? It takes me a long time to write a song and a lot less time to make a painting. Mm. I think because it's just more straightforward. I feel like songwriting is like you have to be in the mood and the stars align and then suddenly you wrote the guitar line and it just appears. Like, I don't know, a song feels like a gift almost. Like it just appears from nowhere, while a painting is like, I'm sitting here for 40 hours thinking about this forever. Or a mural, like, I did this mural of the 1945 Grand Rapids Chicks team a year ago. And that was, like, all 17 players of the team on a building. And it took me, like, 3 months of going outside every day. So it's just, like, it's like a regular job, you know? Like, they paid me quite handsomely for it, which wonderful. But, like, it's a lot of labor. It's a labor of love. And I feel like music is, like, it's a lot easier in a sense, but it's less straightforward of a process than art, because you're just transferring an image from your brain to your piece of paper. I feel like music is like this nebulous like combination of things versus just a flat image.
Now, the old saying is, if you do what you love, you don't work a day in your life. Do you feel like maybe that's where
that's
you
a lie.
is that see, and that's what I want, because you know you mentioned working on this mural for a few months and every day, and similar to like going through
and
your
still
day job.
Like, I mean, dang, I could do more. Like, I want to repaint some of the red, like, because it faded a bit after a year. Like, Michigan winter's rough, and that's an old wall, so it's just a little touch up, on it. But yeah, it's so much work. Like, being an artist is like so much training and so much work and investment. Like, it's not cheap to do any art at all. Art materials are really expensive, especially like outdoor paint. But yeah, like, cumulatively, it is super hard, and it is work. It is straight up work. Like, I was just talking to my new friend, if you get a chance to see his art. His name is Dallas Rayburn. And he's going through the same thing. Like, I don't want to post every day, you know? Like Michelangelo and Da Vinci never had to make an Instagram post in their life. And I'm, like, so jealous of that.
Right.
Like, being an artist is so much work. You have to be an entrepreneur. You have to sell your art, make your website, you know, be advertising, putting yourself out there. And it's a business.
Sure.
It's
100%.
You know, and my parents have their coffee shop and I'm selling my paintings there. And that is literally a business. So it's like, I feel like more of an entrepreneur than even an artist. And the investment of time in order to make a really nice painting is insane. And then, like, the investment of time that it takes to sell it.
Yeah.
Like, when you have a big painting that's, like, $2,000 to $5,000, which is, like, the range that I've sold a lot of them at, when they're, like, past 3 by 3 feet, like, they start getting really expensive, but people will buy it because they know it took me for fucking ever. Like, straight up, like, it's just so much, it's literally manual labor. Like, you really have to be careful with both music and art and taking care of your hands. Like, people tend to get arthritis and stuff a lot earlier with that.
Now, I want to ask you two questions in terms of maybe worth and success in art and what that means to you. And we'll start maybe with the success portion. Do you feel, what do you think makes a successful artist? And would you consider yourself a successful artist? And do you think, or do you think it's more of like it's flexible? It can maybe be case by case, artist by artist.
Depends for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone's life is different, and it's kind of hard to, I don't know, like, compare artists.
Sure.
You know? Yeah. Gosh, I'm having a brain fart now. I need to repeat the question for me.
Well, like, because we had a guy, Hubenel Rodriguez. He was on here, and he painted a few murals around Muskegon and things. He's really, really great artist out there. And I kind of asked him sort of how he figures out his level of success, I guess, or what his okay. worth is to his art, or what that means to him.
Yeah. Success depends. You know, mm-hmm. I'm a full-time artist. I feel like being able to sell my art at the scale that I do is a privilege, mm-hmm. right? There's a lot of people who make amazing art and are never recognized for it because mm-hmm. the entrepreneur portion of it is really hard. Mm-hmm. And success, you know, whatever, you know, you want out of the artwork, you know, if you want to sell it. Some people don't have to sell their art. They just make art for fun as a hobby, sure. and they get to keep their paintings.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, like, I sell all of my art all the time, and I have to make a stock and, like, keep up with the paintings, and mm-hmm. I almost can't right now. It's like people are out buying me, which is a wonderful problem, sure. but it's like, damn, how am I going to make, like, another 100-hour painting, like, in this much time on top of murals and scheduling, like, I'm scheduling things. Like, I scheduled this in between, like, a meeting with another mural place that I'm working with Trail Point Brewing to do a mini mural for them. And they're out in Allendale. And then just now, like, yesterday, U of M contacted me to do a painting of their marching band, the women of their marching band, like a big ass mural. So we'll see. That's in Ann Arbor, though. Wow. So I'm like, wow, we're getting out of Grand Rapids more this year. It's so much work, though. Like, I'm just scheduling things. And I feel like in terms of success, like the fact that I have a schedule that I wanted to be a full-time artist, and now I am, but it took a lot of time and investment, and it might not be what everyone wants out of art.
Right.
Sure. You know, selling your art is hard sometimes. Like, I've had some pieces
that time and effort into
were my
those.
Babies
yeah.
for a time, you know? Like, I had this one drawing that I did in 2014 that was, like, this 4x5 foot skull made out of animals, and there was, like, 100 like realistic animals in this thing. And I had this thing for 7 years at the coffee shop, like forever, and people would come visit it. And it sold to some man, and it was $5,000. I priced it kind of where it wouldn't sell.
Right.
And Mr. Doctor Man was like, that's nothing. Here, I had the U-Haul outside. I'm ready to go. And I'm like, well, here
can't
we go.
Say no to that.
Right.
Can't say no to the money, but damn, that was like, you know, a huge labor of love. One thing that does make it feel better, though, is I have very high resolution images of all of my work, like, saved. So sure. no matter what, if yeah. I wanted to, I can make a big print the same size of it
mm-hmm.
if I want to. So mm-hmm. it's not quite gone forever.
Sure.
But yeah, success is very different. For mm-hmm. both musicians and artists, like, do you want it to be your job?
Right.
Is a big question. Mm-hmm. Like, having it be a job makes it into work.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of takes some of the passion out of it and slows a lot of artists down.
Sure. Maybe the success is having the comfortability of knowing when you can produce the art. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Like being able to make that schedule and being able to be a full-time artist, I guess, if you want to. Isn't that sort of
yeah.
what you're saying? Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a hard path. Like,
yeah.
when I was getting into it, both of my parents are artists, and I told them, they're like, no. But, like, it's so funny because, like,
yeah.
they're still parents, and mm-hmm. they were both artists. They're like, this is a really hard path for you to go through.
Sure.
And we went through this, and it takes a long time to, you know, build yourself up to be a successful artist.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've been doing it for a decade now. I've been selling art for that long,
mm-hmm.
and it's working out wonderfully for me now. But we'll see how it progresses, because I've been very interested in, like, moving and trying new places
sure.
and kind of trying to build more of an online community for my art versus just, you know, my local really strong base in Grand Rapids, where I have, you know, a lot of connections and people that I've met for murals or doing paintings or commissions. Like, I work with the city a lot here, so I would
sure.
have to establish myself again.
Right.
Now, on the other half of where we cover worth, I guess. Where do you, I mean, I know everybody probably knows there's certain factors, time, cost of, you know, production mm-hmm. or whatever, but where, how long before it kind of set in that you could set the value of your art and where you felt like you kind of moved from people being like, hey, can you paint something for me? And then they were kind of like thrown off by you giving them a number
mm-hmm.
or to where you're like, oh yeah, this commission will be this much. And mm-hmm. they're like, oh yeah, we'll pay that. You know what I mean? Like,
it's,
was there a struggle
there? It's pretty expensive,
there?
I will say, mm-hmm. To have a custom painting for me usually, but if it's a small thing, usually I'm done with it really quick.
Mm.
Like gauging cost, a big part of it is the size of the piece for me. The bigger a piece is, the more time, although that doesn't always ring true. Sometimes you have something incredibly small and detailed, and that can be worth a lot of money too, just because it's so dang small. Art is a little hard to price. A lot of it has to do with your previous sales, right? Like, you build up your prices over time, and the mm-hmm. more demand that there is, the more your prices go up.
Right.
And the more someone likes your painting, luckily because I help out at my mom's coffee shop, right, I see what people think about my paintings in real time. And sometimes they love them, sometimes they hate them, and I don't care either way because there's thousands of people who will still buy my art. Mm-hmm. And, like, gauging the cost is, like, you'll know if a piece is going to be popular. Right. You can just see it. Art is really honest like that. You just look at it and you know. I do measure the amount of time I spend on something, too. That's a huge part of it. For murals, usually I do, like, I don't know, 15 a square foot, depending on the type of mural.
Sure.
So because that's way more of a variable. Like, you can have, like, 100 feet. Like, the Grand Rapids Chicks mural was, like, 80 feet on one wall. So that's a little harder to gauge, but time and size and materials and the demand for your art are all the biggest factors in it. And sometimes you'll see some art that is very overpriced than what it should be. And you just know, you know, when you see it. And then other times it's really underpriced. Like, there have been times that I did not price myself well when I was more of a rookie. And I regret it. I regret selling things for cheaper than I should have because I know it would have sold later on. If I had just waited.
It's the patience.
Yeah, it's all about patience.
Yep.
Getting, you know, a customer like that who will, like, the man who bought the skull, like, is very random. Like, I sell a lot of small things frequently, and then there's, like, the occasional giant sale that floats you through a while.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine there's a certain amount of respect that you have to earn in terms of, you know, be in the art community, maybe, in terms of, like, I know, for a while, I think the big thing in music was, like, putting your music up on Bandcamp for free. All downloads, anything non-physical, everything free.
Oh, yeah, Bandcamp, putting it on Spotify.
Free. But I think I've noticed in the past, you know, maybe 5 years or so, people are throwing their digital downloads up for even a dollar. It's some form of money where we're like, no, we need to start being paid for this music that we're making. Where do you think, at what point in your artistry do you feel like you sort of earned that respect from people where people were, like, willing to take in the fact that you're an artist whose work is valid and also your time and effort are valid, and they're not necessarily going to say, oh, you want me to pay you for your work?
It took a while.
Like,
You know, like, I slowly built up all my connections, like, meeting up with a lot of the big people in just the art community of Grand Rapids, like Hugo Claudian or Hannah Berry, who is the owner of Lions and Rabbits Center for the Arts, which is a mouthful, but is an incredible organization for getting, like, new artists out there painting murals. They've, like, brought, like, 600 murals to the city in the past few years, which is insane. You know, the city really needs it. Mm-hmm. And we're beautifying these places that people wouldn't hang out, like, the alleyway that I was painting in for the Chicks mural was, like, no one would be there. Now people walk their dogs there. But yeah, it's it takes so much time to build up that community and meet people and kind of learn what kind of behavior is professional, what to apply to, what events are worth it. If you like doing craft fairs and shows or festival sales, because I have the privilege of my mom and dad owning a coffee shop art gallery, like my art is always up somewhere. Mm-hmm. I always have a place to display it with like no commission. But I have displayed with other galleries when I have like a surplus of art.
Sure.
And then I can like super make money, but it like really depends. And working with galleries outside of my parents' coffee shop, percentages for commission are really high. So that's like kind of challenging for a lot of people. Like percentages can be anywhere from like, I think it's 40% for Lions and Rabbits, but it can be anywhere from like 35 to 85% of the cost of what it sells. So you have to increase the cost of your painting, right? Because these are people with connections to whoever has the money to drop it on it. Like you'll see pieces in Saugatuck for sell for like $10,000, $15,000 at some of those galleries, but there's a huge, you know, Chicago community out there, and people from Chicago really do buy a lot of art, and they have a lot of cottages out there, so it just kind of makes sense to me. But the whole thing's kind of a game, and a lot of it is who you know and getting to meet people. Like, you have to do a lot of research and look up grants. Like, in order to do a mural, like, you got to do so much grant writing. Like, it's not fun. That is work. Yeah, and do a bunch of sketches and get approval from, like, the building and the building across and the city and the arts council and all kinds of things. So it's kind of nice having someone like Lions and Rabbits in the middle to take care of that. So for new artists out there, I really recommend meeting them if you're kind of near the Grand Rapids area. Otherwise, there are a lot of wonderful art organizations kind of around. Like Muskegon has the Bennett Prize this year. And the Bennett Prize is an all-women's figurative art, like, kind of competition, festival kind of deal. And they have some really, really great, incredible local artists that are going to be there, like Andrea Couch. Her work is insane. And that's in Muskegon. And that'll probably be coming up in a bit. She's like a juror for that. And Lowell has Lowell Arts. They have a wonderful kind of event space for displaying art and work with a lot of, like, just artists in the area. And they're pretty close to Grand Rapids, so... Those are some things I recommend to look up.
Tell me a little bit, some comparisons from your experience with, let's say, Grand Rapids. We'll just kind of keep it boxed to Grand Rapids. But your experiences within the Grand Rapids art scene versus your experiences within the Grand Rapids music scene. Tell me, I mean, I both probably give a similar sense of community, but I imagine there's differences and similarities to the two. So can you kind of speak to some of those things?
Art and music are very open-ended. but like art is more so open-ended as a community because art can be all kinds of different things and it's still just like a painting, a sculpture, a drawing, a video. Like it's all kind of a big bubble. You meet a lot of people in our school. With the music scene, like, a lot of it depends on genre and who's hanging out at your shows and your friends and who you know. And meeting with, like, you know, venue spaces that fit your genre and your space. Like, where do you fit in that space? I have a lot of an easier time with the art community than with the music community. Because, I don't know, I feel like shows are a rough place to be sometimes if you're, like, anxious or don't feel, or if you're vulnerable. And that's, like, the whole show is being vulnerable. So, like, it's a little bit harder, but in general, they're pretty similar. Like, people are just there to experience something beautiful and partake, usually. But sometimes if you're, like, playing for a crowd, some people, I'm not bothered by it, but a lot of people will be bothered if, like, people aren't paying 100% attention to you, you know, if you're playing music. And you'll hear people talking in the bar and stuff, and that makes me feel more comfortable, personally. Some people, like, they feel very hurt by that. And I don't know. It's just so much work to, like, meet everyone in the music community because there's so many bands and shows things. While the art community, like, you'll know the artists just from online presence. Like, there's huge groups on, like, Facebook or Instagram or whatever that meet up because of that. With music, like, everything, I feel like, is less obviously advertised. Generally.
Now, this, I was going to ask you a question, but now I'm not so sure. Now, in terms of what, I was going to ask you what you prefer, and now that seems like a bad question to ask because you have to pick between two things you love, and I didn't want to put you in that position.
I don't know. Whatever's the mood of the day.
Sure,
I draw every day, usually, and I play guitar every day. One is a break from the other, and usually I find that being productive and kind of having different emotional outlets has been extremely healthy for me. So, yeah, I have love for them both. But if I had to pick one, art. Art is, like, my whole life right now. Like, I paint all the time, and it feels very good. And it is very challenging, and I feel like I feel more at home doing it. Music's challenging in a different way. And I think I'll have an easier time being an artist as I get older than being a musician. Because after a certain age, like, I don't know, just watching Neil Young's career, like, he's made so many records, but as he gets older, like, it just isn't the same.
Right.
So now's the time for music, but I don't think it's going to be my thing forever.
Do you think, like, do you, could you see yourself, well, let me ask you this first. Do you think it's something that you can do to where you're listening to a song, maybe, and you paint to that song? Is that something that you do or that you've done before?
Oh,
that
yeah.
You can feel, like, you can sort of feel the emotions from a song and then put it.
Yeah, I used to do that when I was younger a lot. That's also, like, something they might make you do in art school. It's like, what does this song make you think of? And it's a really easy, like, way to kind of create new ideas. I feel like being creative is, like, building a muscle. Because it's hard to make a creative painting. Like, when you look at something that actually is creative and it's just unique, like, no one else could have made that, it's kind of mind-blowing. It's just unique to that person. I really value that. And it's really hard to build creativity at all. And it's been, that's been a big struggle for me. Because usually I'm a realist and I paint what I see. And I feel like I want to paint what I don't see. And that's, like, a completely different challenge. But when I do it successfully, it really, like, comes through. Like, recently I did this really distorted self-portrait, and, like, I'm kind of obsessed with it, to be honest. Like, I feel a little vain staring at this little self-portrait and loving it, but it's, like, in a style that both celebrates realism and pop surrealism. So, I don't know.
Do you have an example of it?
I'll show you. It's, like, if you've ever seen the work of Mark Ryden, like, it's these big eye portraits that are, like, super popular, and it's a big part of pop surrealism.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And I don't know. I feel like this specific drawing is, like, really representative of just my experiences in Lake Michigan. But it's nice to, like, in order to be creative, like, you almost have to cross your own boundaries and kind of push through it.
Exactly,
and
yeah.
That was a really big push for me, because usually I'm such a realist that I have a hard time, like,
going out of the bounds.
Yeah. Like, I just like painting whatever I see. So, like, that's, like, a really challenging portion for me, like, consistently staying creative and coming up with new ideas. Because I know a lot of people will, like, once they find that thing that everyone likes online, they'll just run with it when to get their bag from it and just kind of repeat the same painting over and over again. And I feel like I would go insane, like, basically making the same painting over and over again.
Right.
Which a lot of people do. And sometimes, you know, that's fine. You can do that. Right? That can be your thing. Like, if you love it, like, if you love painting, like, three specific things, like, I love landscapes, and I love, like, the color blue, and whatever. Like, you can really make that work for you. But I get too bored doing the same thing over and over again. And I feel like the only reason I'm growing as an artist is because I'm challenging myself to do different things. Because I feel like I still have room to improve. Like, I don't know, you always have room to improve, whether you're a musician or artist, so you just gotta work at it and spend the time, and that's all it really is.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned something that I thought was interesting when you brought up the painting that you just showed us, and you said, it's probably maybe a little vain to just stare at this painting that you've created, but don't you kind of have to have somewhat of that?
Yeah, you gotta love yourself.
You have to be a little bit, like, into your work or feel like you paint something, or even like when I write a song and I know I love it, I'm like, this is it. And I will listen to that song. I will play it over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. There's songs of Hexings. I am unashamed to admit that I will listen to the Hexing EPs maybe once a week, so a couple times
Hell
a week.
Yeah.
I'm so proud of the work that we created.
Exactly. And I think that's not a bad thing.
Right. And I think I don't want to speak for other artists, but I think we may have a tendency to feel bad about those things because we don't want to admit that we listen to our things or we view our own art. But I think you need to have that
to be aware of your art and you have to love it. Otherwise, why are you doing it?
Sure.
Like, why are you going to make art if you don't love it and you don't love, like, what you're making? Like, that's the whole point. Like, I want to make cool stuff. And I've been finding, like, self-portraits really fascinating. And having a lot of different styles that'll play on them, inspired by, you know, different artists, but still mine, you know? Mm-hmm. So in order to grow, I just use, like, the image of me and my self-image in my brain as kind of a base for it. And I really agree with, like, you have to love it. You have to want it, because if you don't love it and love, you know, you'd see yourself in this thing that you've made, like, what's the point? Like, I love my art, and I spend so much time on it, and even though it drives me a little bit crazy sometimes, like, after a certain point, like, being done with the painting and happy with it, or being done with the song and feeling good about it, is the greatest high this world has to offer to be. Like, it's the most beautiful thing, and you're creating something that's yours, you know? Like, that's the whole point. You're just being you. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it's really important to have that self-love. And yeah, I might be like, it's a little fine. A little bit. I mean, I'm drawing a little selfie here. So a little bit. But at the same time, I love it. So, like, there's no shame in self-love. And a lot of my art is about that. It's like people celebrating themselves, feeling good about themselves, feeling good in their skin. Like, and people, you know, I've had really big reactions to my paintings that way. Like, women who have never seen their bodies represented in a painting before, like, they've come to me and been like, you know, this really affects me. I've never seen my body, like, in a painting. And, you know, I've never felt represented before. And that's really cool. Like, I love that. And they get to kind of share in that feeling of self-love, right? Mm-hmm. That I get from making a self-portrait.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just love, man.
Yeah, that's great. No, I love that.
Yeah.
I want to get into the lightning round. We're getting to that point here. But Andy, you looked over at me like you had something to say. I didn't want to forget it.
I just wanted, you brought up hexing. It just like sparked my brain like last week. How have I never seen that music video you guys did where you were, like, beating up that kid in the snow.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, my God. You never saw that?
Yeah. No.
That was an incredible week for us, I feel like, when we put that out. We had no idea people were... I mean,
I was laughing my ass off watching Austin do all these wrestling moves. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is him.
Shout out to Nick, because he acted those out incredibly. He did a very good job. Yeah. But that was such a fun day.
Yeah.
That makes me happy thinking about that. Sorry, I'm over in another world thinking You're about good. That day.
Lightning round?
Yeah, we'll do the lightning round. Now, we've been going over this like every single episode. Like it's not in every single episode, but
it's not.
The lightning round is a figurative term. They don't need to be quick answers. You can take as long as you want to answer them. Most people talk for 5 or 10 minutes a question. It's a very loose, structured lightning round. All right.
One to
loosey-goosey.
1 to 500 word answers only.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we do. We should start putting a limit on it. 240 characters.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's start with a music question. Let's say, what is one thing music has been able to help you learn about yourself?
How to be confident, honestly.
Hell yeah.
Just own it. Be wrong and strong even when you're on stage. Like, it's worse if you just stop.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you got to keep going through it, even if you fumble a little bit. Sometimes your finger's cold, you know?
Yeah.
So being wrong and strong is something my orchestra teacher taught me, and that is a big thing that it has really affected me. Like, I always think of that all the time.
What's a moment in a show that you've had that sort of sticks out in your time playing music?
Usually it's after the show, what people have to say to me that really sticks out, because during the show, I am closing my eyes, I am singing my heart out, and I am on my own planet, and I am away from them. I am singing, I'm on planet Meech. Nowhere else. They're like a nebulous in front of me. What really affects me is what people say afterwards. Like, I've had people have some really powerful, you know, commentary towards my songs, and that makes me feel like I'm a real musician. I'm a real boy.
Yeah. I'm a real boy.
What do you think a real musician is?
Damn, that's a hard one.
What is a real musician?
She said it, so that's what
I'm thinking. Man, who's cool? But, like, I feel like a real musician is anyone who has the guts to call themselves one. Like, if you can put yourself out there and play your songs and make a record, you're a musician. I mean, anyone who plays an instrument.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Would you say that's pretty similar for art
as
well? Yeah,
anyone who picks up a pencil can be an artist. Mm. It's just how much time are you going to invest in it?
Sure.
Are you going to be a good artist or a bad artist?
Subjective.
Yeah, that was the exact word I was going to use. It seems subjective at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah, because do you think, bear with me here. This is a new idea. I'm going to get to it, I swear. That's not helpful. So perception of, like, good or bad artist and what, like, nice. I wish I was a part of this vape crew here.
It's okay.
Someday. Now, perception of whether or not it's good or bad. At what point do you listen to yourself and understand that you're maybe being your own worst critic in a moment?
You have to be.
Yeah.
You got to be your own number one fan and your worst critic. Yeah. You got to be both.
Okay.
Like, if you aren't willing to critique your own work, I don't know if you're going to create anything you even think is good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to have the power to know whether something's good or not. And I feel like that's what makes a lot of art good or bad. And people try to push through and paint what they like, you know? Mm-hmm. Art is so subjective and music is so subjective that something I might hate, someone else will love. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. I'll ask you the same question that I asked first about music, but about art. What is one thing that painting and art have sort of led you to believe or learn about yourself?
That I can talk to people without being there. That's, like, been really cool, is, like, people knowing me through my art and not face, and then, you know, kind of hearing my message. And that's really cool. It's really powerful, too. Like, people will come to me later. It's like, you're the artist? I had no idea. Woohoo! And have so much to say to me. And I'm almost like, that's almost more overwhelming than the music. Because it's like, they might have been seeing my painting for years at my parents' coffee shop and not know who I am.
And have all these questions and
we have a saying for it in Spanish, Pepito Preguntón, is someone who asks a lot of questions. They have a lot of questions, and they're like, why do you make art? A lot of reasons.
That was going to be my next question. So usually I have one question that I ask at the end for the musicians. I'm going to ask you that one, but I also want to ask a similar question, but for art, I'm just trying to piece it together in my head, and I think I got it. Here we go. Now, you get to put together a gallery, typically with this question I ask, put together a bill. But what I want to ask you locally, if you put together, say you're staging a gallery and you put together, you bring three local artists and your own work, but you get to showcase three other artists. Where are you showcasing this work, and who are the three other artists that you...
You're funny. I'm a curator. So obviously my parents' coffee shop, like I always have my art there. So it's like my go-to. If I had the choice of anywhere, the museum, but really hard gig to get into. And even then, like, I don't know, I'm not establishment. And if I'm picking three other artists, they're going to be Pat Perry. He might not be living on this side of the state anymore, but he did a huge mural that's on Madcap on Fulton. And Pat Perry, I became familiar through his artwork through High Fructose Magazine. Just incredible artist who went to Kendall. Second artist would probably be Milt Klingensmith. He is incredible artist. He does these just caricature, like, distorted monster paintings. Like, there's one that we have at the shop right now that is Heidi and her world-famous tiny feet. And it's this orange monster, like, in a beautiful ball gown, and she's orange, and she has the tiniest goddamn foot you'll ever see in your life, and it is immaculately painted, and I'm in love with it, and he's awesome. Would display with him anytime. Another artist, this is going to be a little tough pick here, because those two are, like, pretty tops for me. I really love my friend Dana Walton's art. Dana is an incredible entrepreneur who has managed to kind of take printing to the next level, like even sourcing her own like cloth from the city. But she also does murals and paintings sometimes and a lot of screen printing. And it's just a master at it. And I really recommend Solstice Handmade, like, for design and stuff. Just awesome artist. A lot of, like, nature-y stuff, like, towards the beginning of my career. Some more environmental, local species. Really beautifully painted. Yeah.
Nice. Right on. So we'll do the other question, which is you get to pick a bill. You make a band, a four-band bill. Three other bands, and you get to pick the venue, but you're the headline.
I'm the headline.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Damn!
No,
yeah.
But the trick is the three bands or acts that you pick to play with have to be acts that you've played with or worked with in some sort of capacity. So they can't just be like three random bands.
I totally agree. Yeah. Of course, Alex Perez. I feel like both of us have a very similar energy in our music. And probably Jackie Kalmick. Anything, Jackie, please. I would love to have Greed Death, honestly. I love Greed Death so much. And, like, listening to them record is, like, a treat. It is really fun. So they're really fun to play with, and I'm very lucky to have played shows with them before. So, yeah. Greed Death, Alex Perez, and Jackie Kalmick.
Hell yeah. Hell of a bill. But where are you putting it?
Pyramid Scheme.
Hell yeah.
Boom. I did a mural in front of there. And it's all these giant flowers with eyeballs in the center, and they're like cut and bleeding rainbow teardrops.
Nice.
It's very colorful.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. You have something, Andy?
What was that band that played in Muskegon that had like someone paint during their entire set?
Way, way back when. You're probably thinking a lot away.
Yeah, that's what
it
was.
Thinking of them, yeah, because they would.
Have
do
you
that.
Ever thought about doing something like that, like painting,
yeah,
like
live action?
It's a lot less exciting when I'm painting, because usually it's a lot more successful if I have like a mid, like 50% of the way there painting, because then you kind of have an idea of what I'm already doing. But it's just a lot of layering goo, to be honest. Like, I do a lot of tiny, small layers of paint.
Okay.
So I have done live art events. Not the best for how fast I work.
That's fair.
Now, I think that's a good part to end with the lightning round. Nice. That wasn't so bad. That was maybe great. Our most lightning round.
That was great.
Ever, maybe. Cool.
Zang.
Zang.
Where can people see your art? And do you have anything that you'd like to promote?
So you can see my art all the time at my mom and dad's coffee shop, Palate Coffee and Art, on Fulton in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Always have my art there. Otherwise, I have murals on AutoFixIt / The Garage Bar in Grand Rapids and in front of the Pyramid Scheme. Nice. I am going to be working on a few more murals. You can follow me at Michi Farias Art on Instagram. And I have my website, michifarias.com, where you can find all of my wonderful paintings and eventually my album.
Hell yeah.
Ooh.
Very nice. Cool. Well, thank you again for doing this. We appreciate your time. We always close with the guests giving themselves some advice for the future. So we're going to close with you giving future Michi whatever advice you think you might need to hear in the future.
Well, future Michi, stop being on your butt and work a little harder. Like, I need to sit down and spend the time. Always. I always got to remind myself to paint hard in order to, you know, be successful. So work hard with the time you've got because you're young and now is the time. And keep working hard because that's the only way you can be successful is if you work hard.
Hell yeah.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Very cool. Thank you again.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on. Nice meeting you.
Nice meeting you too.
Yeah.